Wild coffee species Coffea stenophylla has been in the news recently, as BBC, Reuters, Euronews, Sprudge, and more have reported on a recent study published in Nature's Plants, drawing a lot of attention. Researchers led by Dr. Aaron Davis from the Royal Botanical Gardens have discovered some interesting findings related to the organoleptic qualities of a relatively unknown wild coffee species and the potential implications for coffee production globally. One of our passions here at the center is to share with you cutting-edge research and dive into understanding what it means for producers, roasters, and the greater coffee industry. On today's episode, we are going to take a look at this specific research article, as well as a deeper look into Coffea stenophylla. Climate change, future-proofing coffee in a warming world. A rediscovered, forgotten species brews promise for coffee's future. And rare, wild coffee species has Arabica-like flavor, greater tolerance to higher temperatures. These are a few of the titles from various news outlets reporting on the research into Coffea stenophylla. But why the obsession with this species, and why all the excitement? Before we look forward, let's look back. For many years, organizations like World Coffee Research and the Royal Botanical Gardens in Kew, England, have focused on providing solutions to the threats to global coffee production through breeding and genetic programs. Localized organizations across nearly all producing regions have also been participating in this work for decades. As environmental conditions change and market conditions drive the need for innovation, breeding programs of all sorts and sizes have worked to equip producers into the future. Oftentimes, these programs are focused on breeding for disease resistance, yield increases, pest resistance, and more. These issues continue to face coffee producers across the world. The recent devastation of Central American production by leaf rust, as well as predictions into temperature changes across producing regions that will impact the viability of certain varieties of coffee, as well as proliferation of pests and other diseases threatening production and growing market demand for differentiated or a portfolio of quality type coffees continue to drive the need for innovation and ingenuity. However, these breeding efforts are not always as clear-cut as they seem. Breeding programs targeted to produce varieties of superior cup quality present significant challenges. Finding genetic markers or indicators for drought resistance, disease resistance, and the like have been identified and provide a rich source of information for breeding programs. However, identifying the genetic markers for what makes a high-quality cup of coffee is much more complex and involved. The work being done by organizations like World Coffee Research are attempting this arduous, time-consuming, and difficult path. They are working to develop new varieties that possess the vigor to withstand changing climates, but also have high quality characteristics that allow producers to capture this higher value market. However, these efforts can take decades as the development and stabilization of these new varieties take time. Enter in researchers at the Royal Botanical Garden in Kew, England. In January of 2019, Dr. Aaron Davis, together with several other researchers, published a study in Science Advances articulating the high extinction risk facing many of the world's wild coffee species. But why is this something of significance? You see, Dr. Davis is passionate that many of the challenges facing coffee today might very well find their solutions in a better understanding of the wild coffee species out there. So far, he has confirmed the identification of 124 different species, not varieties, species of the genus Coffea. Many of these wild coffee species are at high risk of extinction, and this is why Dr. Davis is pushing for the preservation and better understanding of these wild coffee species. You and I would be quite familiar with the main coffee species cultivated today, Coffea arabica, which makes up roughly 56% of global coffee production, Coffea canephora, roughly 43%, and Coffea liberica, around 1%. but the remaining 121 species are relatively less known. A few years back when I was in Berlin for the World of Coffee events, remember those times when we could gather together? I miss those days and hopefully they'll be back soon. I came across a bag of Coffea eugenoides from Five Elephants, sourced from Colombia's Immaculata Farm. It was fascinating. The lower body, yet super high sweetness, was unexpected. Other roasters are beginning to carry this coffee as well, as I've seen it popping up on shelves and online stores across the world. Coffea racemosa might be another species you've heard of. It has naturally low caffeine content, as well as pest and disease-resistant characteristics, showing promise as a source for breeding programs. We can now add Coffea stenophylla to the list of species being brought to our attention. But what is this species, and where is it grown? And what were the results of the study by Dr. Davis and the team? Coffea stenophylla is native to Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Ivory Coast in Western Africa. As a species, it enjoys lower elevations and hot tropical climate conditions. There are reports through various literature of its drought resistance and partial leaf rust resistance as well. As the current predictions concerning climate change throughout Arabica-producing regions show the potential for rising temperatures, coffee species thriving in warmer climates at lower elevations with reduced demand for water are quite intriguing. The discovery of Coffea stenophylla is attributed to Adam Afzelius, who was a Swedish botanist and student of Carl Linnaeus, who you might recall is the individual credited with the classification of Coffea arabica, dating back to the late 1700s. It first appears in publications in 1834 when George Don, a Scottish botanist, described it from collections he acquired in Sierra Leone. Later in 1893, Mr. G.F. Scott Elliott sent samples back to the Royal Botanical Gardens in Kew with the following description as recorded in an 1896 bulletin. Coffea stenophylla, the narrow-leaved, wild bush or native coffee, is sometimes found wild in the hills and is more often cultivated than the Liberian. It grows very freely and yields quite as much as the Liberian, but is somewhat longer in coming into bearing. Both the natives and French traders at Freetown say that it has a superior flavor and prefer it to the Liberian. In fact, laterally, a certain amount has been exported to a French dealer who is said to sell it as, quote, best mocha. The plant appears to thrive best in the higher hills of Sierra Leone. Something unique to this species was the narrow leaves and black fruits, as opposed to red fruits, which tend to be the norm with most Coffea arabica and other species. The name stenophylla comes from Greek and connects stenos, which means narrow, and phylon, which means leaf, thus narrow-leaved. These samples sent to Kew, England, were later distributed throughout India, Java, Dominica, Ceylon or Sri Lanka, Trinidad, Jamaica, as well as the Straits Settlement, which were a collection of British territories around modern-day Malaysia and Singapore, all with rather inconsistent results. Some areas showed promise, but there is very little evidence that the expansion of its cultivation took off. The reason for this could have been a combination of low market prices, instability in those regions, failed experiments in the region, or the adoption of more productive species such as Coffea conifera or Liberica. In addition, there is a 1904 recording of Coffea stenophylla being indigenous to Guinea and Ivory Coast. The author of this report refers to the species growing in Guinea as the Rio Nunez coffee, after a major river in the country. In the early 1900s, French botanist Auguste Chevalier recorded annual export volumes from Sierra Leone and Guinea to be around 3 to 5 metric tons. He later goes on to record that this species did not take off, as the low yields were a problem to its expansion. This is going to be a crucial component of the adoption and proliferation of this species globally. When we consider the reasons why producers might adopt a new innovation, like a new coffee species, there has to be a significant relative advantage over the current selections. Is this financial? In other words, a higher valued product for the market, such as I previously mentioned, the Caffea eugenoides, which was sold at quite a higher premium over the other offerings. Or is it because their current choice is not thriving? If the yields of this species are not as high as current available species, there has to be another reason or value for producers to switch. The presence of Caffea stenophylla in Ivory Coast come from several late 1980s reports that point to the Sud-Est region, Ira Forest, as well as the Oulaye region in western Ivory Coast as all containing wild populations. And I'll just make a side note here. I apologize if I'm pronouncing these incorrect. From looking at the history and reports on Caffea stenophylla, there are a few takeaways. It appears that this species has survived in the wild under conditions that seem to represent future conditions coffee might find itself combating, and therefore, as a source for breeding programs, potentially has value. The quality of Caffea stenophylla has evidence of being higher than other local grown varieties, but this lacks concrete specificity and needs confirmation. A big question comes as to why it was not adopted in terms of mainstream cultivation as a species. Was it yield issues, perhaps accessibility, or perhaps just the selection of Robusta and the investment into that? Dr. Davis and the research team invested into attempting to locate wild species throughout regions of West Africa beginning in 2014 and culminating in visits to the region yearly from 2017 to 2020. From these field visits, they were able to locate wild populations in Kimbua Hills and Kasewa Hills of Sierra Leone. Though Kasewa Hills yielded only one single plant, Kambui Hills revealed a small population of trees that were being threatened by logging, human encroachment, and mining. However, no commercial cultivation of this species was discovered. So turning our focus to the news headline that captured the coffee world in recent weeks and months, it's important to take a deeper look at their findings. It appears that the attempt is being made to identify if there is validity in investing resources into Caffea stenophylla for breeding programs and or commercial cultivation. But in order to see this as a reality, not only would there need to be evidence of positive or beneficial traits, which the disease resistance and drought resistance qualities have been well documented, but also there needs to be evidence of its high quality potential and yield possibilities. And yield is a big one here. Therefore, through the recently released findings, we see the focus on identifying if the quality potential is there with this species. Now, I for one can really nerd out on the details of a research project. I used to skim over the methods section as boring information for those of you who've had experience reading academic journals. I mean, why else do typical research reports cut in half the font size of the methods section, if you ever noticed that? But I have found the methods section to be extremely interesting and informative in how we interpret their results. So, just a forewarning. Don't skim over the methods section. Give it a good look. It is apparent from the results that the potential for quality of Caffea stenophylla warrants further investigation and research. Though I have heaps of questions about how the coffees were processed, the sensory process used, roasting, sample prep, etc. The point of this study was not to understand if this is an 82 or an 83 point coffee, but more so to confirm that further investigation is worthwhile. In a sense, it was a stepping stone, or a first step in this research process. I will say that personally, when reading the summary findings of the initial testing, I was a little confused by the CRAD protocol versus the SCA cupping protocol, as well as why there were some mixed results. Upon investigation into the supplemental material provided by the article, these became clearer. The Stenophila sample selected for the C-Rod protocol cupping, which, if I must say, was funny that the French organization used the French press in their preparation protocol, but I digress, came from the C-Rod IRD research facility on Réunion Island. It was processed as a washed coffee with a 24-hour dry fermentation, followed by a 15-hour submerged fermentation. And yes, I could definitely geek out about these implications for quality, but I don't want to distract. It was dried through what seems to be a very reasonable and quality-focused protocol, and then prepared for testing. The cupping protocol employed a 20-to-1 ratio of water, brewed via immersion in a French press. It was a Bodum one, if you were curious, at a 95 degrees Celsius and brewed for 5 minutes. This was very nicely documented. The blind evaluation of these samples was performed by a variety of judges and evaluated for odor, taste, specifically acidity and bitterness, impression, specifically astringency, body, sourness, and then aroma. So whether it was fruity, harsh, green, earthy, phenol, burnt, or smelly. Judges were asked for additional impressions and to rank these attributes on a scale from 1 to 10. The Stenophila sample that was evaluated using the SEA protocol was very different than this. The reason I feel it's important is because while an 80.25 cupping score is not really that outstanding, once we see how the coffee was processed, it proves to be very enlightening. First off, the coffee fruit for this sample came from a natural forest in eastern Sierra Leone. I'm not sure what specific location, but perhaps it was the Kimbui Hills. The processing of this coffee was recorded as, and I quote, a small sample of around 70 grams of fresh coffee fruit was harvested. Let me read that again. A small sample of around 70 grams of fresh coffee fruit was harvested and depulped by hand, dried indoors for 2 days, and sun-dried for 4 days to around 12% moisture content, end quote. Initially, I'm concerned about this essentially being processed as a honey, unless the mucilage was washed during pulping, maybe, and then it was dried rather quickly. There were about 4 months between when it was harvested and then cupped, which seems quite reasonable. This yielded about 10 grams of green coffee that was roasted on an akawa and then prepared for cupping using the SCA protocol. You can very easily see why an 80.25 cupping score might not be that impressive if not understood in the context of how it was processed. I believe there is significant opportunity that this score would be higher with better processing alone. The panel of judges for this cupping was much smaller, as the sample volume was not huge. I mentioned 10 grams of green coffee, and they provided a subsequent profile as the coffee stated as, quote, fragrance reminiscent of washed African Arabica close to Rwanda profile, notes of citrus and red berries, hints of floral. On the wet aroma, some fermentation, a little funky. Can I just mention here that we need to move away from using this descriptor, or at least someone explain the difference between good funky, which can be represented by that white boy who apparently played that funky music, which is a song reference for those of you that might not be familiar, and the negative funky that reminds me of when leftovers stay too long in the refrigerator. But back to the quote. Slightly fermented, probably as a result of suboptimal drying and sorting. In the cup, very sweet, stone fruits, honey, some herbaceous notes, some tea quality, like black tea, good body and sweetness. The cups did not show any negative, undesirable qualities. Looking at it from specialty Arabica point of view, it had positive attributes such as sweetness and fruit-driven acidity, end quote. From the description, to be honest, I'd be expecting a coffee with a little higher score. But again, the specific score is not the focus of the study. I'd say from the results, there is a clear indication that the quality potential is there. And if the resistance capabilities exist as well, there is promise for this species going forward. In conclusion, these findings are exciting for coffee. I trust that care and respect will be given to the countries where these coffee species are located, and the value they bring to the industry will be able to be realized by those producers there. The next major hurdle I would see in research to be done concerns the yield and viability of this coffee species in a commercial production context. Even just thinking about the black fruit. We're so used to varieties of colors of red or yellow or orange or pink. What does a black fruit look like when it's fully ripe? Are there differences in ripeness for black fruit? And while this type of research seems to have a quicker turnaround time in terms of producing results, that is, a commercial production of Caffè Estenafila as opposed to waiting the time for it to be incorporated in breeding programs, the longer-term breeding potential of these findings are also significant. It's oftentimes overwhelming as we look at the challenges facing our industry, but I, for one, am excited to see the ingenuity and hard work of individuals across our industry working to leave coffee better than we found it. Thanks to those who contributed to this work, including the work done by CNRA, the National Center for Agronomy Research in Sierra Leone, the many researchers involved, the panels of judges, and the local governments who supported these efforts, I look forward with great optimism for our industry. That's a wrap for today's episode. Feel free to send us your comments, thoughts, and perspectives in the show comments or email us at podcast@thecenter.coffee. Thanks for listening and for joining me today to hear more about this exciting research. Keep learning.